Isn't this a sports show?
Also, one of my earbuds is making a horrible sound. It's just
that's
like
your own voice, Josh.
Crack. Ugh.
Almost entirely.
But first, a monologue.
Oh, God.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe, the fourth best sports talk radio host in Kansas City, according to one guy's defunct blog.
Not as many months. Why did you mark that?
English was hard right there for me.
I just skipped a word.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Now, I feel like I'm Cleopatra. Beards! Beards, feed me grapes!
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Just smack me in the face, because I've been bad.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I think that's one of my favorite intros that we have. All of those either make me smile or cringe, which is, I guess, sort of generally our aesthetic. Welcome into the show, the day of the NFL draft. Don't worry, though, if you're perhaps listening to this show via podcast in the future after the first round has happened. I'm pretty sure the Chiefs haven't added any players. Although maybe a trade could be on the horizon. We'll talk about that a little bit here along with a bunch of other things. We'll talk briefly about a light update with the Tyreek Hill situation. He made a comment that I think is really, really interesting. I also have opinions on Frank Clark that I didn't get all the way through yesterday because that show got hijacked by figuring out what was going on with Tyreek Hill. So we've got a little bit of Frank Clark to talk about, a little bit of Tyreek Hill, a little bit of what the Chiefs are going to do in the draft. If anything could happen tonight, more realistically, what happens Friday or Saturday. Another friendly reminder for you. I will be live on Sports Radio 810 Friday and Saturday during our draft coverage. We'll have the national stuff for you. We'll pop on a lot. I'll be on a lot. And especially right after the Chiefs make their picks, they'll make a pick. We'll get you the national feedback, and then I'll hop on. We'll talk about it at length, whatever it is the Chiefs do, wherever it is they go. So that's we have coverage tonight on 810 as well with Seren, Curtis, Grunny, and Beards will be running. That's also going to be on the Facebook page. But I'll be back on Friday and Saturday. Only a one-hour show down here tomorrow, and Sean Collins will be in again filling in. Appreciate him coming back twice in 1 week. But I will be showing up on 810 starting at 6 o'clock. So we'll cross that bridge whenever we get there. While we're here today, though, we've got crazy good guests for you. Last night, again, over on 810, we really ran the gamut, which included Ryan Tracy, the Locked On Chiefs podcast, and Matt Verderam of FanSided. You'll hear both of those conversations here today in about 20 minutes or so for Ryan and at 5 o'clock with Verderam. We talked mostly Chiefs with Ryan. I've called him Ryan Clark because Ryan Clark's an actual person. His co-host on Locked On Chiefs is Chris Clark. Ryan, I'm sorry for all the times that I've certainly called you Ryan Clark. I think I got it, but Beards wasn't listening, so he doesn't know. Ryan Tracy, Matt Verderam on here today. We talk mostly Chiefs with Ryan and a lot of Chiefs, and then a little bit of national with some absolutely excellent end results with Verderam. You'll hear that down here at 5 o'clock. So that's the plan for today's show. I'll get to the Frank Clark thing briefly, but I want to read you the statement from Tyreek Hill, and then also the follow-up from, I guess, his lawyer. This came out earlier today, and obviously this statement's gone through many lawyers, and I'm not terribly caught up in the flowery language of it all, but there are some specific things that I think are really interesting. I don't know if you can also take them as factual or not, but it's really interesting, so let me spend a couple minutes on this. His statement attributed to Tyreek Hill goes as such, quote, I love and support my family above anything. My son's health and happiness is my number one priority. I want to thank the Kansas City Chiefs, my attorneys, my agent, and my union for supporting me through this. My focus remains on working hard to be the best person for my family and our community I can be, and the best player to help our team win. It's a perfectly fine statement. It's great. That's the thing you say, right? Okay. The follow-up here from his attorney, what I believe to be his attorney, this was just the next paragraph in the statement. Tyreek has maintained from the inception and throughout the investigation that he was innocent of any crime. This is an interesting sentence here. Contrary to some media reports, Tyreek cooperated with law enforcement, waived his Fifth Amendment rights, and answered questions from both law enforcement and DCF. He continues to cooperate with authorities. Unfortunately, due to laws related to confidentiality, as much as he would like to, he cannot comment regarding specific allegations. Now, that expands to some really interesting follow-up questions. If Hill waived his Fifth Amendment rights, as the attorney says, and I don't think that an attorney would risk lying about that in a statement, that would feel like a bad move, but I'm not a lawyer, and I've never been one. The closest I got is that we talk to Seth on a weekly basis, mostly about football and how many kids he has. So I'm happy to admit that what I don't know in a chunk there. And I stand by everything that we talked about yesterday. I think you have to feel gross about this, because if Hill was cooperating, was his fiance cooperating? If Hill and his fiance were both cooperating, how do you believe that a crime was committed if you're the DA and then don't find out what happened and who did it? This is unsurprising throughout this story, but there's a lot of questions that I have that I'm probably never going to get answers to. But it's a really strong statement, and if every word in that statement is true, then you feel good about the evolution of it through those two paragraphs. The end result still is that a child was hurt, in the DA's opinion, criminally, and there was no justice brought to the person that had that act of violence. So that sucks. You shouldn't be able to, you know, really hurt a kid and not see punishment for it. I think that's a reasonable, non-controversial statement. But that statement from Hill, and again, what I presume to be his attorney or attorney's office or whatever, is really interesting. And saying that he cooperated with law enforcement and did not plead the Fifth and answered questions from law enforcement and DCF, and presuming that he would have answered them truthfully, right? I mean, that's probably a different presumption. That word doesn't show up in the press release, and that usually, you know, I imagine that most words generally left out of a statement are left out on purpose, so I don't know. But that's the most recent piece of information. Also, a handful of people have reached out to say that they appreciated the show yesterday and how we've gone about talking about all this and everything. So thank you to those of you who have said nice things about how we've navigated all of this. We've navigated it clunkily and imperfectly, but that's also doing it honestly, because the show is clunky and imperfect. I'm clunky and imperfect. Beards don't nod so hard. The situation is clunky and imperfect, and I imagine you're clunky and imperfect, so if you can acknowledge that about yourself, as I do, I think that's the best way to do it, the most honest way possible. So again, I appreciate everyone who reached out to say something in that regard, because that's what I'm trying to do. So I've given you the statement there also. I don't think that there's a logical way to, like, feel good or be excited by any of this, or for any grant to feel like there's any grand vindication or anything like that. But I mean, this statement is a nice sign and a nice update, in a way that maybe just is another, is just a coin on the positive side of the scale in all of this, whenever it's been very, very heavily leaning towards the negative. Maybe it's leaning a little bit less towards the negative right now. That's all. That's the update there. I hope that seems useful. I wanted to talk about Frank Clark yesterday. I'd been preparing to talk about Frank Clark yesterday. We did talk about it with Seth. But there were a couple of, like, specifics throughout his contract in the details we've gotten and everything that I think is really interesting. And I also feel like I did 5 hours of radio yesterday, and I'm not sure I forgot to give you my actual opinion on Frank Clark. I feel like I've been maybe ever so slightly misconstrued on Twitter and everything, and that might be my own fault because my knee-jerk reaction to the trade was woof, and that's just a lot. But it can be a lot and also be a good thing. Frank Clark is an exceptional all-around defensive end, and I did mention this with Seth yesterday. What I've seen from him before Seth's piece, in Seth's piece, since Seth's piece on The Athletic, this dude has a freaking multi-tool in his pocket as a pass rusher where he can go through four or five different, like, really strong moves. I've seen this guy beat tackles in a variety of ways, not even counting like his ability to stunt and the strength that he shows in stunts and everything as yet another way that he can win. Super impressed by Frank Clark as a pass rusher. He seems like a strong run defender. Maybe not a perfect one, but that's okay. Certainly a strong one. He's also getting paid like DeMarcus Lawrence. So he's getting paid as if he is one of the five best defensive ends in the sport, and he might be. But the thing that, again, I would argue is non-controversial, and I would still probably find someone on Twitter to yell at me about, he needs to perform to that level for this to be a good trade. Let's say the Chiefs had used next year's second-round pick, and it's probably not the Dee Ford pick, I believe I saw somewhere. That Beards, will you look into this for me, please? I believe I saw somewhere that in the Frank Clark trade, that second round pick next year will be the lower of the two between the Chiefs and the Niners. Because the Chiefs have the Niners pick, obviously, that they got from Dee Ford, and their own pick. My assumption is that the Niners are going to be probably kind of a middle of the league team, and that the Chiefs are going to be, you know, in the AFC Championship game at worst, right? I think I saw that. You might have to get into the weeds to the specific draft compensation there, Beards.
Yeah, I'll look around. I might check Pro Football
Reference. One of the it wouldn't be on reference, but one of the
they usually have details about stuff like that.
Okay, well, maybe it would then. One of the initial trade detail posts from somewhere should probably have it. But let's say whatever it is that they spend that second round pick and they use that to move from 29 to 26 to draft Cleveland Farrell tonight. I imagine that there are plenty of people that would have loved that. I would not have at all. I wouldn't have liked the trade up. I wouldn't have been stoked about the selection. Nothing personal with Cleveland Farrell. He seems like a perfectly fine pass rusher and defensive end and a good scheme fit. And also seems like there's a real good chance that he won't get to the 20s at all. All of that being said, for me, this was always about the strategy of how you're building this defense and rebuilding this defense. Where I kind of wanted to see the Patrick Peterson trade, which there's a report that he's the most likely veteran to move tonight or tomorrow night maybe in this draft. But I wanted to see a corner at 29 and then maybe a safety and another corner, the trade for Patrick Peterson, right? I want to see the Chiefs investing really heavily in their secondary. And if they trade for Patrick Peterson and can spend the second round pick on a safety, I will be just tickled. Because I think that's the setup that they can create. One thing I said many times over is I have no interest in them drafting a second round edge rusher or defensive end or whatever, and just adding them to the Speaks passing Ogbaugh rotation. They didn't do that. They went and got Frank Clark, who is a top tier guy at his position. They also paid the price to get him that would indicate that way, and they also are paying him the literal price that would indicate that. That's all. I've just said facts so far. Did you find it, Beards?
So at the bottom of Pro Football Reference, they have it listed as a 2019 first round pick, 2019 third round pick, which I think is a pick swap.
It's
as
a
well.
Swap. It is,
and then a conditional 2020 second round pick.
That's not as helpful. I wanted them to be.
I will keep looking and see what I find.
I think there's probably a decent chance that someone's going to have told us in the comments also.
Not yet.
Robert asked if I'm going to be getting any information. I'm guessing it's more. Is there a conversation about more Tyreek Hill information? I don't know. I've been promised nothing, and I'm promising you nothing. If something comes across the wire You'll hear about it as soon as I see it. So that's all I can say for sure on that front. I think that the end of the second, I think in the second round pick, it's the condition is they get the worst of the two picks, that Seattle gets the worst of the two picks. But regardless, again, if you can figure it out, great. If not, not that big of a deal, I guess. It just shouldn't be that difficult. Chiefs trade for Frank Clark details. It's, this all says it's a 2020 second round pick. I know that. I want to know which 2020 second round pick it was. Not helpful, SI.com. Anyway.
I'm hunting. We'll see what I find.
If you can find it, that would be wonderful. Regardless, again, they paid a big price to get Frank Clark, and that's okay as long as he reaches that level of production. I'm a little bit bummed because I liked the secondary first thing. Regardless, though, there's not even a conversation to be had about Frank Clark versus Dee Ford or Cleveland Farrell versus Frank Clark or whatever. Those are non-starter conversations. It's, and I think it's kind of an intellectually dishonest way of framing it, right? But it's about the total value and total cost for these guys. And if you took this into a vacuum and said, is Frank Clark worth the 29th overall pick and the 60-something overall pick next year and DeMarcus Lawrence money, is that a fair market value for Frank Clark? I would say in all likelihood, yes. I do wonder who was bidding against the Chiefs, because it seemed like everyone else who was interested reportedly dropped out of that conversation. It would have been nice to have held on to that second round pick next year if they didn't have to give it up, whatever. That's largely splitting hairs, because the evaluation of Clark as a player is pretty easy. Beards, you have an answer.
Via prosportstransactions.com. I knew there was like a site that kept
that
track of picks and stuff.
Okay.
Seahawks less favorable of 49ers Chiefs picks. Picks may or may not transfer depending on 49ers Chiefs draft position.
Huzzah! 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 We did it. I was right.
Ta-da!
And we verified it.
This is a good site.
Go team.
Yay.
What's it called?
ProSportsTransactions.com.
Catchy.
Yeah, it's very handy.
Is it well laid out? No, it doesn't look like it at all.
It's all right. It looks old, but it has good information.
Yeah, for sure. I'm bookmarking it. I have a whole little folder for sports. Very useful. Thank you, ProSportsTransactions.com. Not a sponsor. So here are sort of the questions that I've asked about Frank Clark that I think have made people think that I don't like the trade, whenever that's really not what I'm saying. Again, was that the best price they could have gotten regarding the draft picks? Because, you know, the Chiefs are the only team essentially, you know, it's still in the running there. Is he that much better than Dee Ford? And when the answer to that question is largely yes, is he that much better? I mean, like, what's the actual margin between those guys, right? Is this the right way to try to fix a defense? Legit question. And is this the guy to do it that way with? And I think the Chiefs answered yes to, you know, all of those. Like, he's way better than Dee Ford, and he's worth a first round pick more than Dee Ford. And he's worth the DeMarcus Lawrence money. I guess the Chiefs said, you know what? The Seahawks aren't actually desperate to get rid of him or anything, so this was the lowest price that we could pay for him and still make sure that we got him. And they think that he's the right fit for the team, and they apparently think this is the right way to rebuild. So That would make this all a no-brainer. And he's actually going to have an introductory press conference tomorrow that I'll be out at, and we'll stream that on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page, I believe. And so we'll ask about that. I'll see if I can ask a couple of questions in that regard. He's an exceptional all-around player who's extremely versatile. I don't hate this like at all. I just wanted to ask those questions. And I think that for the most part, again, the Chiefs get to answer most of them in the affirmative. We also found out that his first year cap hit is going to be about $5 million. Year two is currently set to be $28 million, which is wild. That's a huge number next year. And the Chiefs still have about $18 million in cap space. When Barry's off the books, it goes up another $9.5 million. They don't have a first-round draft pick to pay this year, and they're not trading up for one. So that's a lower number. I think I saw somewhere that people were estimating less than $1 million for the draft picks in year one, which I honestly thought was a little bit low. So don't quote me on that one. But whatever it is, it's less than it was going to be. And maybe they're saying it was like something like $700,000 per pick, which would make way more sense. In fact, I think it would have to be something around that level. I don't know. But the structure of this deal is really interesting, because why keep the number so low unless you're going to go try to sign Trey Boston, trade for Patrick Peterson, whatever? And so I think that reasonably people have said, like, oh, that's a lot of cap space they're creating for this year. There must be another move coming. I've been kind of in that mindset, and I'd like to at least present you with another option here. It could be as simple in Brett Veach's mind as, why would we pay this guy sooner than we have to? Because if you have any extra space at the end of the year, that just rolls over to next year's cap. You can kick it down the road, or you can use it to pay that guy next year. If they end up having $12 million in extra cap space when all is said and done this year, the next year, the $28 million hit for Frank Clark really rolls around like about 16, because they essentially paid off $12 million of it by saving that cap space the year before. Now, I would add, cap space is perpetually less valuable year to year because cap space continues to grow by each year. And eventually you'd say, well, does that ever catch up? I mean, if you end up getting more space on the road, maybe not. And especially also knowing that the Chiefs are looking to eventually pay Patrick Mahomes a lot of money. So I think it's really interesting. I don't think that they must spend this space this year. I would like for them to, especially if it's Trey Boston, because paying him, whatever, $4 million this year is worth more to me than $4 million in cap space next year, because I think that that raises the ceiling and the floor of a Super Bowl contending team right now. If you feel like your roster is good to go, and there are no additions that you want to make to spend that money, that's okay. And you can just use that to chip away at Chris Jones or Mahomes or Frank Clark's cap structure next year. You could front load Chris Jones's cap hit and say, all right, we're going to pay him $20 million this first season. And then after that, we're going to pay him less each year after that. But there's not really a reason to do that. If that cap space just moves down the line, you can figure it out later and maintain more flexibility in the interim. Kind of interesting. I'd like to talk to Brett Veach about that. Probably not like in a press room with 50 other people, but like over a cup of coffee.
At a McDonald's.
At a McDonald's would be good, where I got to talk to Clark Hunt at like 6:30 in the morning. I asked about Ezekiel Elliott, and the PR guy got mad at me because the suspension was going on. Basically was asking Clark Hunt if he was losing faith in Roger Goodell, and then I got tased by Chiefs PR. And on the plus side, I think only one member of Chiefs PR would remember me from that. So I just have to avoid one person whenever I'm roaming around Arrowhead.
Who is it?
I'm not going to say. I don't want to put a target on. I don't want to speak a hit into existence. One of our AES loyalists could go try to find this guy and cut his brakes. I don't want to do that. His name is actually...
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Some people click this podcast and it says, like, more on Spencer Ware to injured reserve, which isn't official yet, but whatever, and breaking down the Chiefs trade. And like, all right, hell yeah, Chiefs trade.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And they clicked it
and we're 10 minutes in, and I'm about to explain the story of this pineapple hat that I'm wearing.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I almost wore that pineapple hat today. It's very clearly a summer hat, I think, and it's also probably just like a leisure hat. Here in at Sports Radio 810, we got to dress like professionals. I'm currently wearing black and white jorts, an 810 t-shirt, and a Kansas City Monarchs hat.
I'm wearing it.
Jeans, Chiefs shirt, Royals hat, backwards.
You're biased. You're such a biased media member. You're just another biased media hack. There's a comment that I think probably said what I was trying to say more concisely than I did on the AAS Facebook page. You can watch the show on the Almost Entire Sports Facebook page every day. Alex said, I think that what they're getting with Clark in regards to the player and scheme fit in a new system far outweighs what would have been available at 29. Yeah, 100%. Totally agree. Also, that's true if they would have traded up to 25 with that second round pick or whatever. It's a lot of money. It's also less fun because it's, like Seth said yesterday, it's the boat instead of the mystery box that might have a boat in it. So I definitely understand that that's, you know, just sort of psychological in that regard. Last night, we were doing a Chiefs special, Chiefs draft special over on Sports Radio 810. And I had two conversations you haven't heard yet over here that I know you want to hear today. One with Matt Verderam that'll be coming up here in about 30 minutes. And one with our good friend Ryan Tracy of the Locked On Chiefs podcast, RGR Football. The Athletic Matrix is available now if you go to his Twitter page, at Ryan Tracy NFL. So we talked to him about a bunch of stuff. But we started off when I asked Ryan about the aforementioned Frank Clark and how he feels and also how the Chiefs should feel and how Chiefs fans should feel about the trade that the Chiefs made, sending their first-round pick to Seattle for the established defensive end.
You know, I think it's a good fit. First and foremost, that's what it is. He gets on the field in a way that the Chiefs want, that fits the Spagnuolo plan, clearly. And from what we've heard from some of the beat reporters who've gotten inside sources, they clearly see him as one of the top three pass rushers in the league. Mm-hmm. So what they paid him is not out of this world compared to how they see him. And whatever they grade upon, however that system is, he's justified in that contract. It was known that they were in on the Lawrence trade rumors at a time, so they clearly felt that spending the money at the position wasn't a problem. You know, I said the day before it happened that I was good with giving up two twos, but I probably wouldn't have given up the 29th myself. But, you know, that's at that point, the value is what the market will bear. And if that's what they had to do to get their guy, I think now they feel like they have a bigger field that they can address their other issues in the draft and come out at the end of all this with the team they can put on the field that can support Pat Mahomes.
What were your reservations, or what would it have been that got between two twos and a one and a two in your mind?
You know, really, it's just the qualitative comparison to other players. You know, you trade quarterbacks for two twos. Mm-hmm. We've seen that happen recently.
Right.
And so I don't see, while he has been, Frank Clark has been very much more steady in his production in Seattle than we saw in D Ford in the same time span.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you can say that he is a guy that can take on and be so much production and such a force that he can outcompensate a quarterback that touches the ball every play. So,
sure.
And that's just, you know, it's not a huge gap, but it is a little bit of a gap to me. And I think, again, that's what they had to do to get their guy.
And I think all that's totally fair. In fact, I'm probably in lockstep with you for the most part. One thing, though, as I've gone from like, oh, God, that's a lot, over to like, why was it so much that they gave up for Frank Clark? The dude is a multi-tool player. Like, I've used this analogy already, but like to say that, you know, whenever in baseball, guys, you talk about pitchers having like five different pitches. You're like, oh man, the versatility on this guy. It seems like Frank Clark's got five different pitches because just every element of being an edge rusher, he's got it. You can watch five random clips and you might see him put out five different moves. And that to me jumped off the screen.
Yeah, I won't argue with you at all. I think not only is Steve Spagnuolo pretty happy right now, but I think Daly's mouth is pretty much watering with what he can do scheme-wise,
right?
How he can move him around, who he can jump in where. And, you know, the other guys that they brought in through this season are going to be the complement to that because when he moves, they're going to have to move someone else around too. And I think they went about signing free agents that will complement Frank Clark.
That's interesting because you're right. We did see them essentially sign a lot of guys with similar types. But Frank Clark is clearly the crown jewel of the edges, and I mean, he can compete with Chris Jones for being the brightest crown jewel, which I think is, you know, that's a good place the Chiefs are at right now. With that in mind, though, they have invested a lot in this defensive front, and we've talked a little bit. I've talked with the aforementioned Seth Kizer. In fact, we'll talk to him in 30 minutes right here. A lot this offseason about the idea of just investing a lot of money in your secondary and doing that kind of Patriots model, not paying through the nose for an edge rusher. Were you buying into that philosophy, at least as an option of something the Chiefs could do, maybe should do? And does that give you any pause with the way that they've actually just ended up giving all this money to Clark and will probably soon give a bunch of money to Chris Jones?
You know, I was starting to feel a little bit trepidatious that that was the road they were going down, because Seth has looked at that. Chris, our other co-host on Locked On Chiefs, has looked at that and have felt that that's the direction to go. But at the end of the day, you have to be aggressive in order to produce the opportunity for turnovers in the secondary, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to move quarterbacks off their spot. You have to get in their face. You have to confound people. And so I am one that I think investment in the front four is important. Now, what you're going to wrap up in Clark and Jones together might be a little bit over the top, but we're going to have to see how that all comes out.
Also, the ability of those guys to play beside each other is really exciting to me as well. Because again, looking at just a little bit of Clark tape, I'm not grinding through film like the best of you, but seeing a little bit of just what he was doing in terms of stunts and stuff. The idea of Clark and Jones being able to work together that way also helps sort of calm my nerves a little bit, because one thing that I was starting to get a little bit more concerned about is whenever you're playing against Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game, you can have Dee Ford shot out of a cannon, but by the time he gets to Tom Brady, even if it's super efficient around that edge, it's usually too late. Julian Edelman has the ball in his hands 11 yards downfield by the time Dee Ford actually gets home. But part of that is, I'm sure, an indictment on Bob Sutton. So you mentioned how he fits in Spagnuolo's defense. What do you want to see from Clark and Jones and Okafor and maybe Derek Nnadi in that four-man front that Spagnuolo can use to get pressure up the middle and to wreak the most havoc on guys like Brady?
You know, I want to see them use their skill sets from various angles. See them flip those guys. They're going to stunt a ton, but it's not just going to be the loops. You're going to see some inside-out moves. You're going to see some things that let – I am especially intrigued by Ogba inside with his length and his leverage, what he can do there. But I will say this, too. I think that all sets up for helping the blitz game as well, because they made it clear in the announcement that they consider Reggie Ragland still to be a contender on this defense.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, my favorite thing about Reggie Ragland is he can blitz those A gaps. And that is a way to get to Tom Brady and any other quarterback.
And that's the evolution that seems so obvious to me. That again, paying an edge rusher made me a little bit wary, but then you realize the fact that I'm sure Spagnuolo's on a similar page. It improves my confidence a lot. So with all of that being said, let's look at the draft coming up this weekend. Again, probably not going to make a pick on Thursday. First of all, let's talk about what was at 29. What was the main target? Was it going to be an edge rusher in your mind? Did they saw that with Frank Clark? Are you now afraid of a larger gap being somewhere else as they move out of the first round?
I don't think edge rusher was going to be their target. I think they clearly wanted to get an experienced NFL savvy edge rusher before the draft, because when you look at who's going to be available there, I don't think they're as highly touted as a lot of the national media puts them out to be. I think they all have flaws. I was thinking if they needed to get an edge there at 29, the hope would be that Cleveland Farrell would be the guy that fell.
Right.
Because when you look at Sweat, Rashawn Gary, Brian Burns is a 3-4 OLB, not a DN.
Mm-hmm.
Even Josh Allen, they all have some warts. They're not a complete guy in any respect. So I think they felt like overall for what they needed, this class didn't really have it to offer at the top echelon of talent. So I think edge was not in their plans, and I think they were looking at the secondary with the two corners and the one safety that I had on the first round.
Yeah, so I'm looking at your big board right now, and you can get this yourself. You can just go to the Twitter account
Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter, or you can check out at Chiefs Digest. It's on there, the website, by our friend Matt Derrick. You can hop over to Chiefs Digest and find Ryan's post that includes the big board. It's really nice. I whenever I first saw it, I was impressed because I just love a well-designed thing, period. And this is one. So good work on the layout here, Ryan. I'm a big fan. But looking at the defensive, look at the defensive backs in that that first tier. I also imagine that these numbers don't all add up completely perfectly because the draft isn't quite that clean. In your first round grades, you had Byron Murphy, Greedy Williams, and Nasir Adderley. Those guys are not going to be in play for the Chiefs, I'd imagine. What is the first tier that you think they could perhaps trade back up to if they wanted to use those two twos to make one move?
Well, you know, the pick that I was aiming for was either 22 or 19, because I think of the other teams picking at 20 and 23, the Steelers in particular, are going to be looking at those corners. And if you can get up there with that capital, I think that's what you would be trying to do. You know, I hear conflicting reports about Nasir Adderley. I think he could fall all the way to 29, especially if some of the other corners that are rumored to be trying to peek into that top 32 get there.
Right.
You might see him actually available. So, but those, to me, are the only three that are really viable. Again, there's just not a completely well-rounded game by any of the others.
And so now whenever you're looking at starting from the 60s, and maybe, I mean, two picks in the 60s, if you'd like them, I know that I'm saying, like, hey, simulate 59 or so picks, and then let me know how the board's falling. But with the way that the Chiefs, I would argue, have a pretty large need at corner and safety, would you be more partial to letting the board follow them than looking at DBs in those two picks in the second? Or do you think that they're going to try to move up and isolate one of these guys a little bit higher?
Me personally, I would let the board fall because I don't personally see another safety on this roster currently that can play the deep field and let Tyrann Mathieu be the robber and get close to the line of scrimmage and try to be a playmaker. Now, I don't know that the Chiefs agree with me, and they may feel that if they can get one more guy, whether it be the corner or the safety, and they can get up into the low 40s, that maybe they can get their guy and feel like they are solid across the board. But I would like to see him take two.
I would, too, and I don't know how much you subscribe to the idea that the NFL draft is in large part a crapshoot. I've seen people talk about that. I've seen other people rage against it and say, oh, it's a science. I would argue that's probably a little bit of both. But now they've also spent a couple of draft picks they won't have because they go get Frank Clark. Do you have a philosophy in general in that regard?
I lean towards the science. I think the draft is probably 80% work and science, and there's a wild card factor. I don't disbelieve that the Chiefs did their homework or that the scouts did a poor job in scouting Kavari Russell. I feel like somebody named Dorsey took a chance because he had a feeling and he was wrong.
Right.
But the body of work was there and the research was there. And sometimes, especially because we don't know what goes on in meeting rooms and we don't know the mental makeup and whether somebody actually fits what you're trying to get him to do, to push him to do. And these are 22-year-old kids, so there's a certain margin of error that you have to bake in.
Kavari Russell may be the definitive name of, like, figuring out how long people have been, like, Chiefs nerds, like, in the market or whatever. I know it doesn't go very far back, but Kavari Russell, like, I haven't thought about his name in, like, a year and a half, and you gave me PTSD. I got flashbacks right then.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
No, you're not. You're not. You're glad you could pull Kavari Russell out of the air and haunt me with it. Stupid. We're talking to Ryan Tracy.
One, I guarantee it somewhere.
Say again.
There'll be another one somewhere. Oh. Watch Cleveland's draft.
We're talking to Ryan Tracy. He's at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter. You can listen to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. So among these DBs, because I do want to fan out to the other guys that you think maybe the Chiefs end up finding a spot for. But again, we're now looking basically two full rounds into the draft before the Chiefs are currently slotted to make a pick. Of the guys in this second round tier, who is it that you would sort of circle at corner or safety or both? Do you say, oh, this is the name that I really hope we see fall to them and I think has a real chance of getting there?
You know, there's a number. I think most of the ones that I was – was hoping were going to be the best fits probably won't be there. I think they're going to be early, you know, in the 30s. I don't think they're going to get to 40 like Darnell Savage, maybe Juan Thornhill. You might have a chance at Gardner Johnson if you get up into the 40s. But I think, honestly, the one guy at safety that I think the Chiefs like, that I love the way he plays, and I think he did them a service by running a terrible 40 at the pro day. If Taylor Rapp actually drops all the way to the bottom of the second, I think the Chiefs run up there kicking and screaming because the guy is a playmaker on the field. He fits their mentality. Maybe he's not the fastest player, but they're going to plug him in and love the way he plays.
So help me understand, how would Taylor Rapp fit into this defense? What would that do for Tyrann Mathieu? How does it free him up to do what he does best?
You know, it would let him roam. It would let him not have to play all the way into the box. It would let them have somebody they can blitz with, they can play the intermediate zones, and Mathieu would be a true roamer at that point. I think it would put a little more pressure on him to be playing deep when they're only in two safety sets, but I think this team is going to continue, despite the DC change, to roll out three safeties for a significant portion of their snaps.
That's interesting. I haven't thought about that. You're probably right, but the safety depth chart right now might be my least favorite depth chart on the team. Now that whenever I kind of think about it in those terms, is that true for you as well? Am I missing somebody, or do you have a secret love of Dan Sorensen that you want to share with me? Not even a secret love.
Oh, you definitely don't listen to the show.
I said secret love, and I went, oh, that's the wrong. Go ahead.
I think especially if Taylor Rapp were available and they're able to sign him, I think Dan Sorensen is completely expendable. I think the one thing that is redeeming for him in this scheme is I like him best as a strong safety, not a nickel linebacker specifically, but a guy that can blitz. And I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to recognize that as well. And Steve likes to send safety blitzes. So I think that's a feather in Sorensen's cap. But my bigger thing is I think it's full of question marks at who can play free safety. I don't feel that Lucas is a great fit back there. I think, again, he's better closer to the line of scrimmage. And I just don't think we've seen enough out of Armani Watts to feel one way or the other about where exactly is the best fit for him. And he needs this season, I think, to kind of develop and find his own space.
This is kind of tangential. Do people yell at you about Armani Watts? Because I feel like every time I say, like, hey, I'm not totally sold on Armani Watts, he's played like three games and then he got hurt, I get a horde of people on Twitter running at me with torches and pitchforks asking how dare I disrespect their god Armani Watts.
Flamethrower. That's what I get.
Why is that?
Because they want him to be good. They want him to be the pick that came from the later rounds that proved everybody wrong and made it and was an impact player. And he's got some traits that are really leaning towards that. You know, he can make plays on the ball. He's instinctual. They're longing for the days of Jerron Cherry and James Hasty. At least I am.
Right. I think that's the right answer. Okay, so let's get out of the defensive backfield. I don't personally have any strong feelings about the linebacker group in this draft or the linebacker group currently on the team. I'm hesitant to want the Chiefs to invest more in that position group at the moment. Is there anybody there that you would want to fight me on?
I don't know that I want to fight you, but I will say this. For the modern age, for the modern nickel linebacker type, a guy that can stay on the field for three downs because of his athleticism, there's a sneaky high volume of those guys in this draft. I mean, a second day, I can name four or five of them right now, and I think Mac Wilson will be a second day guy. But Drew Tranquil's underrated, Vachon Joseph, Bobby Okereke can actually move a whole lot better than he looks on film. And this wild card of Jelani Tavai out of Hawaii is going to be an interesting one too. Guys that play a lot of coverage and are comfortable there. And if they can be instinctual and learn to defend the run, I think there's plenty of options, and there's even quite a few on day three as well.
All right, I don't mind that at all. I can buy all that. What I do want to talk about, though, is the pass catchers. We talked not very long ago. We haven't talked about it over on this side of the glass recently, and this is Chiefs draft special, so we're going to get into the weeds. I want to see the Chiefs add a tight end. I've wanted that for a while anyway. I think not only could they improve on Demetrius Harris, he's now gone. Chris Conley, now gone. Tyreek Hill is a huge question mark on a variety of levels still. Does the NFL suspend him? Is he a chief at all? We just simply don't know. So I think at the very least, those are really reasonable conversations to be having. Could you see the Chiefs going to either of those positions with one of those late second-round picks?
Possibly, yeah. I think it all depends on what they grade and what they're emphasizing and what they're looking for. You know, a lot of folks are high on some of the more body beautiful, big receivers that don't get a lot of separation and are, you know, contested catch guys. I don't think that's what the Chiefs are looking for. I don't think they want to throw into tight windows if they don't have to. I think they want guys that can use their short area quickness and run away from people.
So I think that you're totally right. I think that's been Andy Reid's model for a little bit now, at least, and especially whenever you're looking for value guys. What are a couple of those names that you would say are at the top of that list that maybe you could scoop up in the second, third, or fourth rounds?
The top of, I'm looking for Paris Campbell, who I think is probably the most underrated because of the way he was used in college, but he can be a deep threat as well as a crosser type guy. Very athletic, plays special teams, a big boon. He's at the top of my second day list. Followed by Deebo Samuel, who's had a little injury thing, has a little attitude thing, has a couple of hiccups, but is a very productive player, can separate, especially out of the slot, and I like a lot of what he does. Sneakily, Miles Boykin's a big guy who could separate as well. He doesn't quite carry downfield as well as you would like, but I think, especially in that, you know, I don't want to call it a possession receiver because it has a negative connotation, but a guy that can break free underneath, I think he's somebody to look at. Terry McLaurin, I think he can be scary, but I want to see more consistency out of him. Mecole Hardman is a guy that is a day two, like, long shot for me that I think someone may grab earlier, but he's got a lot of athleticism. And then there's still a few guys there that are going to be left on day three, like all the way down to Keyshawn Johnson, Gary Jennings. I think Jalen Hurd's really intriguing, and everybody's draft darling Andy Isabella, I think, will go day three.
Okay, last thing before I let you go and get these commercials in. The tight end group is interesting because I've heard talk about these Iowa guys forever now. You don't have either of them as a first-round grade, and even outside of that, they're your only second-round graded guys at the tight end position. What do you make of the tight end position group and what the Chiefs could do there?
You know, I do think they are the two best, but I just don't value tight end as a day one kind of position. They would have to be an athlete beyond what either of them are. And Fan is a very good athlete. He's not near as well-rounded as Hawkinson, so I can see Hawkinson going first. But I think there are guys that are productive and still sneakily within the top five or seven in terms of athleticism that you can have in the third round, maybe even the fourth round, particularly in Sternberger out of Texas A&M, who can stretch that seam pretty well. I don't know about his lateral agility that I want to ask him to do whip routes or anything, but Irv Smith has got a lot of tout. He's not my favorite, but I can see where what they're seeing. Personally, my favorite is Foster Moreau out of LSU. I think he does a little bit of everything. Team captain, he blocks, he catches, he's solid, low drop rate. And then a couple of guys on day three, Josh Oliver has a lot of athleticism, but is still learning to play the role of Kale Waring. And then my guy Drew Sample out of the University of Washington as well blocks the snot out of people and just wasn't thrown to in college. He went to the Senior Bowl and everybody had to kind of peek their heads up like Groundhog Day and say, since when does he catch?
Ryan, I appreciate it. If you want to get more information from Ryan throughout the draft, you should go at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter. You can also listen to Locked On Chiefs podcast. And also right now out the Athletic Matrix, all these draft prospects, Ryan went through and broke them down on an athletic level. You can get the more information on that. It's his pinned tweet at the moment, at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter, plus RGR on YouTube. You can see some of his work on Chiefs Digest, including his big board up there. Have I missed anything? Have you put out any more content in the last 30 seconds?
No, I just had to take a breath.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. Have a great one.
You too. Ryan Tracy, at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter. One of our favorites around here. Always doing incredible work in a bunch of incredible different places. I'm sure we'll hear from him again pretty soon after the draft. I don't know, man. We might bleep around and call him during draft coverage and just be like, hey, man, they just took some guy I've never heard of in the sixth round. You got something for me? And he probably will.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I have some very like Bono-esque pink glasses that I did not wear with this jacket today, because I didn't want to get beat up in the hallway by Todd Leba.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Thanks again to Ryan Tracy, Locked On Chiefs, or Jared Football on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL. Some questions in the comment section we'll get to really quick before we get to Matt Verderam. I mentioned Alex's comment earlier about how Frank Clark outweighs whatever would have been available at 29 or anywhere in the 20s, and I'm totally with you on that. There were a couple of questions about the safety position, though, and I think there are some really fair questions. Someone was talking about, again, just the safety positions in general. Ryan said Boston should have been signed. What's the update on Watts? Is he ready to go? I think they like Armani Watts just fine. I like Armani Watts just fine. I think that separates me from a lot of Chiefs fans on Twitter that freaking love Armani Watts. And I just think he's a guy you have in the rotation that you think has a higher ceiling than Jordan Lucas or Dan Sorensen. But all of those guys currently have a role to play. I think Watts is probably the most versatile of those guys in a best-case scenario. But I wouldn't have been mad if they would have signed Trey Boston ahead of time. The fact that he hasn't been signed by anyone yet means that after the draft, if the Chiefs don't get it, frankly, after Friday, if the Chiefs haven't gotten a safety with one of their 2 second-round picks, I would sign Trey Boston that night because I think this team needs I think the second starting safety on this team isn't currently on the roster. So that's where I'm at in that regard. And Alex was saying he's heard a lot about Taylor Rapp. We ended up talking about him with Ryan. And, you know, talking about getting a dude like Rapp, who's a center fielder, like a ball hawk sort of safety. The one thing I'd add to that is that with Matthew, they can pretty much find whoever it is they want and then have Matthew do the other thing because he does everything really, really well. If Matthew's your ball hawk type of safety, you feel good. If he's your box safety, you feel good. If you have two versatile safeties, then the offenses never know what's coming. So for all of that, I think this team has just a really great variety of options coming up in these next couple of nights with the NFL draft. You can listen to it all over on Sports Radio 810 whenever we come back here on ESPN Kansas City. Matt Verderam of Fansided, that's next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.